Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, and in fact, streaming around the planet. It's 6 minutes after the hour, the first hour of our program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives, and Bernie is actually running for the Senate now. Bernie.org is the website if you'd like to know more about that. Congressman Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Always great to have you here. By the way, just let me quickly point out to our listeners, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, TomHartman.com, click the live chat link, and if you'd like to call in, if you have thoughts, comments, questions, concerns, complaints, whatever, Bernie is here and absolutely available to take your questions, 866-440-THOM, 440-8466. Bernie, I noticed a year ago there was an article in the Indian press. Strangely, it didn't make the American press, but this is from March 24th, 2004. Amid the backlash in the U.S. over outsourcing, automobile giant General Motors is planning to shift millions of dollars worth of white-collar jobs to countries including our India. The move is part of a cost-cutting program which aims to slash GM's manufacturing costs by 25% by the end of 2005, an internal report in the company said. And then they go on through the details of that. And then day before yesterday, the Times of India ran this story, Dateline New Delhi, America's loss is turning out to be India's gain with the announced 30,000 job cuts in the U.S. General Motors this week will unveil plans to increase its workforce in India by nearly 30%. And then they go on to the details from that. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that this is, you know, what we knew was happening for a long time. And that is, we are losing almost completely our manufacturing sector in the United States. What is horrendous about the announcement of GM 30,000 jobs being lost in the Midwest, what is horrendous about the Delphi Corporation going into bankruptcy, is you're looking at the heart of decent-paying manufacturing jobs in the United States of America. And there are some experts out there who are wondering, in 10 or 15 years or even less, whether there will in fact be a automobile manufacturing capability in the United States of America. And that is at the heart of our decent-paying manufacturing jobs. What we are also worried about is not just these jobs going to India, but I believe that in the near future we're going to be seeing for the first time Chinese-made cars coming into the United States of America. And this is all part of the attack on the middle class, part of a disastrous trade policy which has been pushed upon Congress by large multinational corporations supported by the Bush administration, which basically says, hey, if you want to go to China, if you want to go to India, if you want to pay people 10% or less of the wages made in the United States, we in the White House, in the leadership of the Republican Party, we think that that's a great idea. You go do that. And then on top of that, Tom, it is not just blue-collar jobs that are being lost. I did a press conference in Montpelier, Vermont, with some people from a company where 35 workers who produce books. They are information technology people, design books, layout books. Their jobs went to India. There are studies that have been done that indicate that millions of information technology, white-collar jobs, good-paying jobs, are also on the cusp of leaving this country. And the result of all of that is that we are seeing real wages in the United States not keeping up with inflation. We're seeing not only the loss of good-paying jobs, but their replacement, the replacement of those jobs with lower-paying jobs, Walmart-type jobs, part-time jobs, jobs without benefits. And this is, if we don't turn this around, for the first time in the modern history of America, our kids are going to have a lower standard of living than we do. You're going to see the continued decline of the middle class, continued increase in poverty, continued growing gap between the rich and the poor. And, man, we have got to stop that trend.
Bernie, it's really interesting. I'm on all these email lists, you know, on the right, the left, and the middle. And ever since GM announced this layoff, the right-wing blogs, the emails that they send out to not just to the average folk, but to their hundreds of right-wing talk show hosts all across the United States, because I'm on that list as well, and the guests that they're offering to go onto these talk shows are all basically saying the same thing, that the reason why GM is losing these jobs and the reason why so much American manufacturing is going overseas is because American workers are too greedy.
Right.
They organize into unions and they demand things like pensions and health care and high-paying jobs, and we are just too greedy, and America just has to get with the program.
Right.
And
Man,
this is nuts.
You're touching. I mean, this is, you know, we need 10 shows on this. We need to be talking about this 24 hours a day, because you put your finger right on the most important economic issue facing America. And that is, first of all, these very same guys who now told the middle class in America, we can't afford to provide you with health care, with pensions, with decent wages because of globalization, right? We just can't do that anymore. These are exactly the same people who told us that unfettered free trade, that NAFTA, the permanent normal trade relations with China, that the other trade agreements were great ideas.
That they would raise our standard of living.
They're going to create all kinds of jobs. Think of that Chinese market. Think of the Indian market. So these same hypocrites, the same vulgar people who told Congress and the American people that unfettered free trade was the wave of the future in order to improve our standard of living, now 20 years later what they're saying, oh, gee, because of globalization and unfettered free trade, we got to cut back on your wages, cut back on your health care, cut back on your pensions. There is the most important point, I think, that listeners have got to understand, the working people have got to understand. There is a war going on in this country against the middle class. And what you just referred to in what all of these guys are saying, which is absolutely true. There's a guy from the National Association of Manufacturers says exactly the same thing. Workers have got to understand they cannot keep getting these same benefits. And the answer that we have got to, the question we have got to ask is, excuse me, why is that? Isn't worker productivity going up? Well, yeah, it's going up significantly. Isn't technology exploding, making us a more productive country? Yeah, technology is exploding. Well, if technology is exploding, if worker productivity is going up, in fact, why aren't our wages going up? Why isn't the middle class expanding? That's the question that we should be asking. And I think what all of these right-wing guys are telling us is that everything that they told us over the last 20 years is a lie, and designed, in fact, not only to shrink the middle class, but to make the very wealthiest people wealthier. Because what we have to be clear about, Tom, in the midst of all of this stuff, there are some people who are doing very, very well. And that is, we saw last year, for example, that the CEOs of the Forbes 500 corporations had a 54% increase in their compensation. We've seen in the last year the only group of people in America whose compensation, whose income has gone above inflation, are the wealthiest 1%. So, in fact, what we're seeing is not only an attack on the middle class, but at the same exact time, the people on the top have never done better. That's what America is becoming. And we got to get our fingers on that issue, and we've got to change it, or our kids are going to be in very serious shape.
And I got to tell you, Bernie, I am absolutely mystified. I'm absolutely baffled by the number of members of Congress, the United States Senate and the House of Representatives, who I've had on this program, and I raise this issue with them, and I say, can't we do something about this with our trade? And for that matter, even some of the unions who I have on this program, and I say, you know, can't we do something about this by changing, you know, by getting out of these trade agreements, by changing the way that we do trade, by going back to the way that we did trade for 230 years in this country that created the greatest industrial empire
exactly.
in the world, and they say, no, you can't. It's a done deal.
No, it's not. Nothing is a done deal. I mean, I think what we have got to understand, I mean, the fact the law is very clear, and every listener should know this. Congress can do anything that it wants to do tomorrow. That's what democracy is about. We can make changes. Will it be easy? No. But should we do it? Should we move in that direction? Absolutely. I have legislation in that would repeal permanent normal trade relations with China. There's other legislation in brought forth by other members of Congress that would repeal NAFTA. Now, our opponents are, oh, you want to build a wall around America. You don't want any trade at all. That's crap. Of course we want trade. But we want trade based on principles that benefit the American people. Gee, Boy, what a radical concept.
What a novel idea.
Golly. And your point is well made, Tom, is that what is going on now is ahistorical. It is unprecedented. Let us not forget that after World War II to 1973, with the nature of the economy was that the middle class expanded, poverty went down, and the upper class also did very well. Everybody did well. But what you're having now is very much the opposite. We've got to rethink that. We've got to make a lot of changes, including fundamental changes in our trade policy.
Amen. God bless you, Bernie. I should tell you. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie.org, his website. TomHartmann.com if you want to drop into the live chat room. If you'd like to call in, our telephone number, toll-free across the United States, 866-440-8466. 440-THOM. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
There's a Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line, a flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paid much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched to thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore.
Welcome back, my friends.
And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore.
We can't make it here anymore. Well, we got to change that. And one of the people who's working very, very hard to change that in America, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie.org is website. 22 minutes past the hour, by the way. Welcome back to the Tom Hartmann program. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. And Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you are live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good day, Tom and Bernie.
Hello.
Bernie, here in Michigan, our natural gas supplier has been allowed by our so-called Public Service Commission here in the state to raise their cost, and the cost to the consumer, 47%. You know, I consider myself a democratic socialist, so I would say that the answer here, and it may not be a utopian answer, is to nationalize these entities. What say you?
Well, what I say is that for a start, when you're talking about basic necessities of life, like keeping people warm in the wintertime or keeping our economy going in a way that doesn't rip off the people, I think at the very least, Rick, the government has got to be infinitely more aggressive in regulating these large energy companies. And I'll give you an example of something I was just thinking about. In Vermont, and I'm sure all over the country, prices of gas at the pump have gone way down from where they were when they after Katrina. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the economics of the energy industry. But if you don't think the fact that many of us in Congress, and in fact there is right now an effort in the Senate to impose a windfall profits tax on these oil companies, if you think that didn't have an impact in scaring these guys to begin to respond to the needs of consumers, you are kidding ourselves. You know, we're kidding ourselves. So these guys have gotten away with murder, and the government has got to be much more aggressive in making certain that people get energy at a price that is affordable, rather than is currently the case, seeing these energy companies enjoy record-breaking profits while they're ripping off the American people.
Well said. 1-866-440-THOM, 440-8466. Our number, Bob in Burlington, Vermont. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, how are you doing today?
Okay, Bob, how are you?
Pretty good. Bernie, do you have a comment on the article that was brought out in the Post today about the Justice Department staff attorneys issuing sort of a directive that delays reorganizing plan in Texas was in violation of the Voting Rights Act, but the Bush political appointees overruled them and it didn't get challenged by justice?
Well, I'm not totally shocked. I mean, what we're seeing, Bob, is I think most Americans now understand, is an incredible abuse of power in this Republican-led government. They control the House, they control the Senate, and they control the White House. With what DeLay did in Texas, which was, as I understand it, unprecedented, went down there, used his authority as a United States congressional leader, ordered a redistricting in Texas so that the Republicans could gain 5 more seats in the U.S. House of Representatives, was an outrage. As you know, he is currently has been indicted because he is in violation of, the perception is that he's in violation of Texas law, that the Republican, that the Bush White House would try to support DeLay certainly does not surprise me, Bob.
Patricia in Sacramento, California, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi there. Wow, what an honor to be able to talk to you, Congressman Bernie Sanders. I also wanted to add to what you were saying, Tom. There are other jobs besides manufacturing jobs that are leaving. I have a neighbor who works at HP. She's an accountant, and she's training people in India to do her job.
Sure.
I also have another friend in Santa Rosa who got laid off of a mortgage company. What they did is they would they sell loans after the loans are funded. And these jobs are going to India and China. So you're starting to see it in payroll, in human resources, accounting, you know, just all these different areas. And I have no idea what this administration or the Republicans are thinking, because I believe in bottom-up economics, meaning if you pull people out of poverty, you increase the wages of the middle class, they'll spend. If they spend, the rich become richer. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, well, I agree with you. You're exactly right. And you're also exactly right in pointing out that a lot of white-collar information technology, computer-driven jobs are also now being lost, often to India, sometimes to China, sometimes to Russia, sometimes to Eastern Europe. And what I fear very much is that there could be a real hemorrhaging of these jobs, which often pay people very, very good wages. And we've got to address the issue of the loss of information technology jobs as well as the loss of blue-collar jobs. Because if we continue to move down this path and lose good-paying jobs and see the only new jobs that are being created in America are service industry jobs, low wages, low benefits, this country is going to be in very, very serious economic shape.
Well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website, TomHartmann.com. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM. Toll-free across the United States. If you'd like to call in, it's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartmann program, where it's 27 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartmann.
Now, if you want higher wages, let me tell you what to do. You got to talk to the workers in the shop with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, boys, it won't be long. You get shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take a kid to the seashore.
There you go. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you, the Tom Hartmann radio program. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-440-8466. If you'd like to speak with Congressman Bernie Sanders, his website, bernie.org, bernie.org. Check it out. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, tomhartmann.com, click on the live chat link. Hank in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, Congressman, I agree with everything you said so far. But I am putting your feet to the fire because I hear this from congressmen as well as senators. What are you doing to stop this, or what is anyone else doing to stop this? You keep saying we, the people have no power in this situation. You are the legislators.
Yes. Okay, good question.
You determine what to do, and I haven't heard it from anyone. We're doing this, this, and this.
Okay, good. Fair question. All right. As I mentioned a moment ago, in terms of the trade issue, I have introduced, and I believe we have about 70 co-sponsors, legislation to repeal permanent normal trade relations with China and to renegotiate that treaty so that it works well for the American worker. So I am the author of that legislation.
Now, that would that allow us to establish tariffs on certain Chinese
sure,
goods so we can protect domestic industries?
Yes. What we're going to do is end what we have now, and then we'll renegotiate it. Start from zero.
Cool.
And work out a program that makes sense for the American people. So, Hank, that's one thing that I've done. I am on board. I have voted against every trade agreement that has come down the pike because I knew what would happen. I am supporting legislation that would repeal NAFTA and do the same thing, allow us to go back to the drawing board and develop trade policies that work for the middle class. I have supported legislation which makes it easier for workers to form unions so that they can negotiate decent wages and decent benefits. I believe in a national health care program so that we can stop the decline of our health care system, more and more people without health insurance, and move in the direction of every other industrialized country by guaranteeing health care to all people.
It also makes our
raising the minimum wage to a living wage. So those are some of the things, Hank, that I've been working on.
Yeah, and I just toss in your suggestion for national health care. It makes our industries more competitive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Tree in Montpelier, Vermont. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Bernie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I went to see my psychiatrist, and she called. Well, they designated me well care for a plan, you know?
Yeah.
And I called them 7 different times, and I got 7 different stories. And so I had the psychiatrist call them. And they gave her a different story and said they couldn't send a drug evaluation plan.
Okay, well, why don't you give my office a ring?
I have, honey. This you got to know. The psychiatrist said I will go on the radio. And
Tree, this is about the mess with Medicare Part D, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yes.
This is the Medicare drug plan?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I
okay.
got 7 different stories, 7 different times I called. Last time I called, they said the pharmacy had the drug evaluation plans. I called the pharmacy. They don't have them.
Yeah. This is a real problem. Tree, thanks for calling and raising that issue. Bernie.
Right. No, Tree is absolutely right. This is, you know, I voted against that pharmaceutical industry bill. It is totally confusing. I mean, there are people who have PhDs who are trying to fill out forms for their mothers and can't quite figure out what we want to do and what we are trying to do, taking on the pharmaceutical industry, the Republican leadership, and so forth, is make this a much simpler program, make it a program by which the government can negotiate prices with the drug companies so that we can lower the cost of medicine, not only for our seniors, but for all Americans. We could lower the very high price of this prescription drug Medicare bill. We could provide better benefits for our seniors. So it's an issue that we're working hard on.
Okay, Walter and Shawnee, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Walter, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hello, Tom. Hello, Bernie.
Hi, Walter.
Hey, Bernie, listen, all this trade business has been going on since Jerry Carter was president.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter, I'm sorry. And it's been snowballing downhill ever since.
Yes.
Everybody's been moving, ever since they broke up the unions, ever since then. And, you know, I used to work in union shops and everything, right? Every time I turned around, another job was either going south, and when it did go south after that, it did end up in China or Indonesia or wherever, right?
Yep.
And it hasn't stopped. I mean, you know, greed.
You got it.
They're paying for the transportation. There's no more manufacturing plants here. You know why? This, you know, warehouse you have to pay taxes for. You have to pay people. Now you don't have that, but you're running the garbage with the trucks, right? The trucks ain't making money anymore because of the fuel. So, you know, everybody's going poor except, like you say, the rich guys and the poor guys, poor people, well, they don't give, you know, what are you going to do, right? Isn't that a form of communism already?
Well, I think it's a form of extreme greed. It's a form of people who claim to be Americans who head up these very large multinational corporations who have basically sold out the American worker and the American people, who have indicated they could care less about what happens in the United States, that what matters most is what their profit margin will be in the next quarter and what their compensation will be. So what you're seeing is these guys on top making huge compensation packages, sending our jobs to India, sending them to China. The middle class is shrinking, and these guys could care less. And with all of the money they have, they buy a number of politicians in Washington and the White House who ends up developing policies which benefit these guys. That is what's happening.
Well said. Bernie.org, the website for Bernie. TomHartmann.com if you want to drop into our live chat room, 866-440-8466. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Annie in Olympia, Washington. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, perfect timing, because, you know, it's true that it is the CEOs and it is the politicians, but you can't forget that there's a lot of people that really are essentially supportive of this system. And I really have a thought about how that has come about. And I think it's multiple things at play, but the critical thing is that there's still lots of people who really believe that the potential is there for them to leap to the top of the pile. And it creates kind of a momentum and kind of a belief system in people that's reinforced heavily right now because of really what I would call a thin line between belief and magical thinking. That's kind of a big part of the faith-based community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think those are forces that keep people not really as critical as they should be mm-hmm. of the issues that you're addressing, because at some point in their mind, they think that they could be carried forward. And the other, of course, thing that's happened now that is kind of we've always accepted corruption in politics. We've kind of had a wink and a nod kind of a thing about those values, and this is really out on the table right now. But again, it's like, you know, people become corrupted in tiny ways, and it all sort of creates a different way of seeing this, and it's a way that simply immobilizes people and keeps them from having, like, a response.
Well, I think, Annie, you make a very good point, and I would add to that this whole gambling mania that seizes America, that every time somebody wins the lottery, it's always on the front pages and on TV. Instead of focusing on the reality that since 1973, the real inflation accounted for wages in America has declined by 11%. So I think what Andy is saying is there's a mentality out there, gee, maybe I can strike it rich. Something great will happen to me, rather than sitting around and saying, gee, why are tens of millions of people becoming poorer, losing health insurance, losing pensions? How do we work together to create a society where all people do better? But Andy makes a good point.
Thank you, Annie. Kevin in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
I just need to applaud you guys. This is just classic populism and classic class warfare. This is doing great. It's pretty simple, guys, why the manufacturing jobs are leaving. Tom, you had expressed a little earlier that you wanted to turn back the clock to the way it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. Would that be correct, or...
No, in some ways, Kevin, but
okay.
I know that you're gonna take it out of context. So go
well,
for it.
Well, no, I'm not gonna. 30, 40, 50 years ago, just like we'll use 1950 as a starting point. Basically, the Indian and the Chinese people, probably about 1.5 billion people, were manufacturing cavemen at that time. All right.
I'm sorry, Kevin. What? Not true. 20 years ago, I was in India. 15 years ago, I was in China. Back before they had, you could stand in Tiananmen Square and see an ocean of black bicycles go by before they had become a manufacturing powerhouse. And it was a sophisticated country. We're just not going to go there. Unless you want to respond.
Well, Kevin, what is your point?
He's saying, I dropped him. I'm sorry. His point is that the Indians and the Chinese are too productive and that American workers just can't compete.
Well, sure.
It's the old Thomas Friedman, world is flat.
I wish Kevin had stayed on, because the point is what the function of the United States government is in fact what we're elected to do, presumably, is to protect the best interest of the American people. And if the middle class is shrinking and poverty is increasing and more people are losing health insurance, obviously we are not doing that. No one is anti-Indian. No one is anti-Chinese. We want to see poor people around the world do better. But you don't have to destroy the middle class of America to make that happen.
Yeah, well said. Matt in Wichita, Kansas. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Thank you, Tom. Bernie, shifting gears just a little bit, there have been recent articles in both the New York and the L.A. Times talking about torture and killing of literally hundreds of Sunni Arabs by Shiite security forces that we're training and equipping. I find it unbelievable that the administration chooses to completely ignore this situation, act like it's not happening. This isn't America, Bernie. I'd like to hang up and listen to your comments.
Well, obviously, it is not only a horrendous situation, but it's going to be counterproductive, because I think the Sunnis are looking and saying, gee, if this is what the future is, that people are going to be picked up off the street, disappeared, tortured, this is not the kind of country that we feel comfortable. We're going to continue to fight. And that's obviously counterproductive to everything that we want.
Doesn't work for us. It's 45 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment, 866-440-8466, our telephone number. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So that's how it is. That's what we got. And if the president wants to admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo and look us in the eye. Call us on the cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, or Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains. It's done closed down along with the school and the hospital. And the swimming pool.
Welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, Bernie.org, his website. Steve in Bigwater, Utah, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yes, I just want to point out that I think corporate America just doesn't seem to realize that they've completely cut the legs off of the biggest consumer base in the world here by cutting wages here. Henry Ford had the right idea. You pay your employees enough money so they can make the products that you make. And if we just magically all of a sudden had the minimum wage go to $15 an hour, we would have a massive influx of major consumers that are paying for their products not with plastic out of their credit, but paying for them with dollars that they earn, and our economy would boom. I don't understand why corporate America can't look beyond the next quarter, and if they had a five-year basis they had to look at, they would realize things like this.
Steve, I agree with what you said. Nothing I could add to what you said. I think you did right.
Yeah, absolute bottom line. Joyce in Atlanta, Georgia, you're live with Bernie Sanders. Joyce in Atlanta?
Yes, I'm here. I just wanted to say that I think that once the corporations realize that sending these jobs overseas is really not helping them, especially when it comes to the customer service type jobs, the call centers, that kind of thing, because I don't care how much, they try to tell the corporations that they do a good job of training them on the language. The language is a problem.
Right.
Yep. Okay.
Well, Joyce raises a good issue. I think there have been a number of people who have been very frustrated talking to folks and just having abroad and having a hard time communicating. I think in terms of computer repairs and so forth, that has been a serious problem.
Janet in Olympia, Washington, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Oh, you say Janet?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hey, you were talking a little bit ago about the you guys doing something about something, and I have a beef with all these we are accepting all these people into our country because they're doing jobs, quote unquote, that we won't do, and based on the salaries, of course we won't do them the way they want to do it, and yet at the same time the federal government is sending all its uniforms and all these things for the border guards and things like that. They're sending those to Mexico with our tax dollars. And I'm sure that if there's anything you can do at all, it would be appreciated, because I am really upset by this. We're sending that kind of work down there to do work for our government at their labor prices down there, that they're shipping all these jobs out of the country and making this just like this whole program has been about. And here we are sending things that we could be doing here. And I've been hearing about this all the way through the
Janet, let me just interrupt you. You're absolutely right. But what I want to tell you, and just so you understand this, is that the President of the United States, what you're talking about is outsourcing. And while the President doesn't hold press conferences on this every day, he believes in this.
Yeah.
That's what they believe in. He believes. They had an economic report come out a couple of years ago, and what his people say, if a product can be manufactured cheaper than in the United States, it makes sense to do that. Well, you can manufacture products cheaper in Mexico or in China. And what they're saying to these corporations, hey, no problem, you just go do it. And I think that that is an outrageous idea, which is helping to destroy our economy.
Yeah, the irony is that the Border Patrol's uniforms are now made in Mexico, the American Border Patrol. It was in the news yesterday. Joe in Denton, Texas, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Well, thank you. Bernie, I really enjoy listening to everything you say. One of my biggest concerns right now, and I think the root to all most of our problems is all the money that the lobbyists have that are they're influencing Washington. I'd like to see some laws passed, some kind of curbs used to stop this lobby money from flowing into and corrupting many of our legislators.
Joe makes a very good point. I think people just don't appreciate the number of lobbyists that are in the city of Washington and the impact they have on the political process. But these guys are extensions of large multinational corporations. When we try to lower the cost of prescription drugs in this country, the lobbyists descend on Capitol Hill like a bunch of locusts. There are something like 800 well-paid lobbyists to lobby 535 members of Congress. Pharmaceutical industry spends hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbying and campaign contributions and so forth. So Joe is right. These lobbyists have a tremendous impact, but don't forget that they are just extensions of big money interests who want to influence public policy to benefit these corporations.
Bernie, we only have about 30 seconds left. What can be done about this, and what are you doing to try and change this?
Clearly, we have a campaign finance situation which is absolutely out of control. Big money dominates the political process. Big money makes large campaign contributions. Increasingly, wealthy individuals are running for office themselves. So we need strong campaign finance reform, I believe, in public funding of elections.
Yeah, well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us, Bernie.
Good to be with you.
Bernie's website, bernie.org. Check it out, bernie.org. Congressman Bernie Sanders here on the Tom Hartman radio program, where we're moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America, a place where despair is not an option. If you want to change this country, we have to get politically active, all of us, right now, right away. There's an election coming, my friends. Once again, Bernie's website, bernie.org, ours, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, it's 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes after the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, the True People's Radio. Welcome back. Our number 1-866-440-8466. James Bamford should be joining us shortly here. Take a few phone calls. Chris in New York City. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm doing well. This is my first time calling in. I really like your show.
Well, thank you.
I don't know if I'm going to get fired for this, but I'm calling from within the Fox News News Corp building right now.
Okay.
And you know about the Fox News War on Christmas.
The War on Christmas conspiracy theory, yes.
Right, yes.
Yes.
So you're aware about that.
Right? I'm well aware of it, yeah.
Obviously, I'm sure you've talked about how they took off their website the holiday ornaments that
yes.
Bill O'Reilly had.
That's right. They changed them to Christmas ornaments yesterday.
Right. I have a new one for you. I'm
okay.
Holding on to the invitation to the News Corporation holiday party.
Oh, no!
So I wonder if they were going to recall this one.
Oh, man. You gotta fax me that or something.
I'm going to try. It's a huge color thing. So I don't know. The other thing, so here it says, join the News Corporation family for an exclusive party in the celebration of the holidays.
Amazing.
And there's no mention of Christmas anywhere on there. And
yeah.
I guess if Bill O'Reilly had his way, there'd be maybe a picture of Jesus on there or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually what you ought to do is you ought to contact the folks at Media Matters. Do you know how to get a hold of them?
Oh, yeah. I love those guys.
Yeah. You should just pass that along to them. Yeah, just MediaMatters.org. The contact information is right there on the website.
And when you see the visual of this, you'll really laugh because not only is there no Christmas anything on there, for some reason, and I can't explain this, Tom, there's nuclear symbols on it. There's snowflakes and nuclear symbols. I don't know what that's all about.
It's let's nuke Iran, by the way, Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays or whatever.
I have no
Amazing.
Idea.
Okay, Chris, thanks a lot for the call.
Enjoy.
You just made my day. It's a good one. Amazing. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Kaz in Painesville, Michigan. Hey, Kaz.
Hey.
What's up?
Oh, actually, I wanted to get on while Bernie was on, but still, this will do.
Yeah, I'm a poor second, but I can.
No, you're listening all the time. But the point I want to make, you know, everybody's blaming the politicians. They want to know what the Democrats are going to do at this point. But I blame the American people as much. Being a union member, a skilled trades, and but back during the greed is good Reagan years,
yes, sir.
A lot of our union people voted. Because they thought that they were gonna, you know, that they were gonna get the big tax breaks and every doggone thing that they aren't getting. We're down that road now.
Yeah, they voted for Reagan. You mean they voted Republican?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, well, at this point, well, geez, I get excited, I forget everything, I got some of the stuff, but sooner or later we're gonna. We're finding. And this could have never been accomplished without the greed of the American people. That means the workers and everybody, and it would have never been done.
I agree with you, Kaz, but I have to take it a step further and say that there have been people raising voices against this from the very beginning. For example, Ross Perot. Remember the presidential campaign?
Yes, I do.
And Ross Perot, and he got 21, 22% of the vote. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, nobody heard what he had to say, but by and large, the media turned him into a cartoon character. And because you have to recognize that most of the large media in the United States is owned by the same multinational corporations who are outsourcing jobs to India right now and who are profiting from outsourcing. You got Tom Friedman running around pretending he's a liberal, writing books like The Olive Tree and The Lexus and the World is Flat and promoting this nonsense. So there's just a mind-boggling amount of misinformation out there, and the people who were actually predicting exactly what would happen and doing so accurately were being marginalized and ridiculed. And in that kind of an environment, I think it's hard for the average American to make sense of what's going on.
Oh, definitely. And I want to end in one thing. I do still blame the American people, us, myself. The thing is, the greedier the victim, the more successful the con is, and that's where we're at. And we were conned by those people and the American voters, and we could have stopped it a while back, but they went for the con.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Kaz, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Tyler in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, it's Michigan Day. Hey, Tyler, what's up?
Hey, I was just calling to an earlier caller said we should put energy into the state's control, and I was wondering what other government-controlled entities are run successfully or well. I mean, Social Security is failing miserably, and if that was run by a business, those people would all be indicted right now.
Well, Social Security has never missed a payment, Tyler. I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about.
Well, if you look at other things that are run by the government, they're all run horribly, and
my mail comes on time.
What's that?
My mail comes on time.
Well, and the price on that has gone up dramatically, but I don't hear anybody complaining about that.
You know, if I'll tell you, Tyler, if you can find somebody who will take an envelope from your home halfway across the planet and hand deliver it to another person for you know, 30, 40 cents, I tip my hat to you.
You honestly believe that we should take natural gas and gasoline and put that under the government's control and add
no,
to the
I don't.
Democracy?
No, I don't. I absolutely don't. I don't think that those industries should be nationalized. I disagree with Rick on that, but I do think that when you have any kind of an industry that meets two important criteria, one being that they affect literally, they affect our ability to survive. They affect our ability to stay alive. And number two, that they have formed into essentially monopolies. That whenever you have an industry that meets those two criteria, I think it is not just a good thing. I think it is a vital role of government, we the people, to exercise some oversight over that industry. And we're not doing that with the oil industry.
And that's, by the way,
the position that Bernie is taking as well. Bernie would not advocate nationalizing the oil industry.
If it is crippling the working people of America, and I agree that it is, why doesn't the government take taxes off the items that that the people need to survive on, like water, electricity, gas? wouldn't it be a fair solution then to have the government quit taxing gas at nearly 20%?
I think that a more appropriate solution, Tyler, because what you're talking about is let's take the race to the bottom. And I would suggest that we reverse the process and start racing back toward the top like we did, you know, over the last 200 years in the United States when we built a strong middle class. Rather than talking about, hey, let's reduce taxes on big corporations more, or let's reduce taxes on even, government functions or, you know, whatever. I'd say let's make sure that people are more well paid so that we have more people who are in the middle class who can afford to pay for their water, who can afford to pay for their heating oil.
Okay. And
doesn't that make sense?
Your last caller brought up some excellent points about outsourcing of jobs, and I'd agree that that did start years ago in the Reagan and first Bush administration.
Well, to some extent, it's been going on for a long, long time. But Reagan breaking the back of Patco, I mean, we look back now and we see that was the turning point in 1981.
1981. And what did the Clinton administration do to stop that? I think they propelled it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think Bill Clinton sold us down the tubes. With regard to labor policy, Robert Reich was okay. He was a pretty good guy. But with regard to trade policy, Bill Clinton sold this country out. And I will say that, and I will say it loudly, and I will continue to say it. Democrats don't like to hear it, but, Bill Clinton did just a miserable job by pushing through, not just signing NAFTA and GATT. He enthusiastically pushed those things through. The General Agreement on Tariff and Trade, which led to the World Trade Organization, would not have happened if Bill Clinton didn't spend about 2 weeks sitting on the phone, calling up and bending the arms of members of Congress, because there was broad opposition to it. And
in closing, I'd just like to say that I don't agree with the current things of the Bush administration, but I just hate to listen to everyone say it's this administration's fault.
No, it's not.
At them. We need to talk about solutions instead of saying, hey, it's their fault. Let's talk about solutions and let's get things done.
I'm right there with you, Tyler. Thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Ken in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Okay, I got your solution for you. I wanted to talk to Bernie, but you'll do. You're
good. Okay.
What I want is I want legislation passed that says that everything that the U.S. government uses, and I mean right down through the military, has to be manufactured by U.S. labor in the United States. It's paid for by our taxes. If we have to make it again, we can make it.
Ken, that was the piece of legislation. When John Kerry said he voted for the $87 billion before he voted against it, the money to fund the troops?
Yeah.
The original bill had a rider in it that said any money for reconstruction or support of the troops must go to a corporation that is chartered in the United States and pays taxes in the United States. And Halliburton's Kellogg-Briner Root Division had just rechartered itself from being an American corporation to being, I believe, a Cayman Islands corporation,
right,
so that they wouldn't have to pay taxes. And that's the reason. I mean, that rechartering, that was the reason why Kerry originally voted for it and then later voted against it. And, it's just as long as the Republicans are controlling the House and Senate, that ain't going to happen. They're going to continue to say, it's just fine with us to give money to Halliburton, who reincorporates offshore, or these divisions of it offshore, so that they don't have to pay taxes, even those tax dollars that are going to them. So I agree with you totally. But the political reality is we got to change Congress.
I want it closer than that. I want it not just to be a U.S. corporation. I want it to be U.S. labor. I want it to be subproducts of U.S. made.
Yeah.
I don't want it coming in from China. We put a screw in it, and they call it manufactured in the U.S.
No, I know. Dell Computer, for example, great example. I agree with you, Ken. I absolutely agree with you. Good one. We'll have James Bamford right after this at 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Rich and poor, lord and boor, hark to the blast of war. Tinker and tailor and millionaire, actor in triumph and priest in prayer. Comrades now in the hell out there, sweep to the fire of war.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here, the Tom Hartman Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio. Streaming around the world on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, CRN Digital, and AirAmericaRadio.com. James Bamford is with us. Jim Bamford, he's the author of numerous books and a new article in Rolling Stone. Is this Rolling Stone, Jim?
Yeah, Rolling Stone.
There we go. I've lost track of you here for just a second. About John Rendon, Bush's general in the propaganda war. Jim, I think a lot of people will be amazed to discover that Ahmed Chalabi's organization, the Iraqi National Congress, was not invented by Ahmed Chalabi or any Iraqis.
No, and it wasn't paid for by them either. It was actually created by a public relations firm, an American public relations firm, hired by the CIA to create this opposition force to Saddam Hussein. And the company was the Rendon Group, a very secretive company that specializes in helping the CIA and the Pentagon do regime change. It did it in Panama, and it worked in work on the Iraq War, and basically during all the 1990s, John Rendon was the top advisor to Ahmed Chalabi.
We're talking with Jim Bamford, best-selling author of A Pretext for War, 9/11 Iraq and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agencies, and Body of Secrets, Anatomy of the Ultra-Secret National Security Agency, and a new article in Rolling Stone, The Man Who Sold the War. Why would the CIA fund through a private, why would they do it at all, number one? And what number two, why would they do it through a private PR firm, fund the creation of an opposition group in another country?
Well, that's a very good question. I think they felt that it would be better to outsource that. What the CIA has been doing, especially recently, is to outsource as much as possible. As I mentioned in the Rolling Stone article, 50% of the CIA now is outsourced, 50% of the entire agency. So the move to outsource is just a move that the CIA has been making for a long time.
What's the benefit to the CIA of outsourcing?
Well, I think the benefit for the CIA is that they have this sort of buffer between their own people and the group that they're trying to help. So it'd be very complicated having actual CIA people over there doing that. John Rendon has a private company, and so you know, if people have to get in touch with Chalabi, Rendon can both act as his advisor and also his media assistant, so he can help get him on television, and that's very difficult for the CIA to do something like that. He's a professional public relations person.
Aren't there also issues of secrecy? I mean, private corporations have some privacy protections in the United States that government agencies don't have. Government agencies are required to operate, even secret ones like the CIA, at least with regard to Congress, are required at certain levels and in certain ways to operate with transparency, whereas particularly privately held private corporations can basically close the books and say, sorry, you can't see it.
Well, that's true, but Rendon was given an enormous security clearance by the CIA and the Pentagon. It's top secret, and then it has about five different code words after it indicating what levels of security clearance he has. So he has access to all the key forms of intelligence according to his security clearance. That's imagery, signals intelligence, human intelligence, the whole work. So
right.
He's basically...
he's the CIA without the CIA.
Yeah, and he would funnel money from the CIA. The CIA would funnel $350,000 a month to Chalabi, and they would funnel it through the Rendon Group, and then Rendon would take 10% of it as their payment.
Now, here's where it gets very bizarre. We've got this guy, Adnan Ishan Saeed al-Haideri, a 43-year-old Iraqi, who apparently was willing to tell us all these wild stories about Saddam having weapons of mass destruction stashed under his palaces, biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons, in order to try and get a visa to move to Australia. And the CIA did polygraph tests on him. They knew he was lying, but he was the guy whose assertions were being used by Bush to convince the American people to go to war?
Well, isn't that it really is bizarre, but that's true. The INC, the Iraqi National Congress, again, the group created by the Rendon Group, brought this defector, the defector you just mentioned,
right. Haideri.
Al-Haideri, from all the way from Iraq to Bangkok, basically, to have him give his same spiel to the U.S. media.
And, in fact, he gave that spiel to Judy Miller.
The problem was he had flunked the polygraph and didn't seem to bother the INC. They still presented him. They presented him to the New York Times, Judy Miller, and also to Paul Moran, who was with Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And he had the worldwide broadcast rights. Judy Miller had the worldwide print rights.
what makes it very interesting is that Judy Miller had this relationship with Chalabi, where she would basically be his front person for a lot of these stories. She admitted for a decade she was printing all these stories, and Paul Moran, the broadcast person, formerly worked for the Rendon Group and formerly worked for the INC. So there was
amazing.
Fix was in.
Yeah, and thus we went to war. It's an amazing story. You can read it at rollingstone.com or pick up a copy of Rolling Stone magazine right now. You got to read this thing. The Man Who Sold the War by James Banford. Mr. Banford, thank you so much for being with us today.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thank you.
Great speaking with you. It's 27 minutes past the hour, and Tom.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be, yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be.
So, somehow I hope not. Welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour, 25 minutes before the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program, the place where smart people get their news. Speaking of smart people, one of the smartest people I know, Victoria Jones, is on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, yeah, listen to the funky, you know, that's really not where I want to be, actually.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, I attended the White House press briefing today, and I was not astonished that nothing new really came to light about anything. However, we were told about how good the economy is, although when one reporter questioned about the national debt, he really didn't get an answer when he pointed out that the national debt was, I think it's 8.1 trillion, billion, a lot of money.
Yeah, trillions, yeah. I knew it was well over 7. I didn't realize it had crossed the threshold of 8. That's mind-boggling.
It seems to have done, and yet there seemed to be some question from the administration as to, well, we don't know where those figures are coming from. The reporter pointed out, well, it's actually coming from the national debt website.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it still didn't get anywhere. Apart from that, I would say the aim of the administration right now is to stay very much focused on what they view as a good economy and not to talk about issues such as planted stories appearing in Iraqi newspapers.
Mm. And was Scotty speaking on the record or off the record today?
On the record today.
Oh, so this was his first on-the-record news conference in a while, wasn't it?
No, he did one yesterday.
Oh, okay. So yeah, yesterday he broke his 2 or 3 week streak there.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if he was there on Wednesday because I wasn't able to attend. And he may.
Yep. We just lost Victoria. See, this is what happens. You say something about Scotty McClellan, and he hears it on his little earpiece, and he calls up Alberto Gonzalez, and he says, you got to do something. And Alberto Gonzalez calls up his good friend Porter Goss, and Porter goes, okay, that's it. Nail her phone. And suddenly, boom, off she goes. Well, let's just try it again. As you were saying, Victoria.
Well, I'm calling from the White House. So.
See, this is what I was saying while you were gone. I said, this is as soon as she starts mentioning Scotty, he calls Alberto Gonzalez, and Alberto takes care of it.
I'm gone. I'm absolutely gone. I'm calling from the Talk Radio News Service booth in the basement of the White House.
Yeah.
And just disappears. So Scotty, it does seem to be back. But the rumor is still out there that he will be gone come January, and he has energy, but he does strike me just as a little bit tired. Maybe I'm projecting, but I would think he's got to be. My goodness, he's got lawyer's fees, he's got all kinds of things. I'm sure he did not sign up for.
Now, yesterday or the day before, Senator John Warner was asked to what his take was on the difference in story between George Bush saying that at the Battle of Tal Afar, in his big speech, you know, his plan for victory speech, that at the Battle of Tal Afar, the assault, that it was led by 6 Iraqi battalions, and in fact, the Time Bureau Chief, Baghdad Bureau Chief, Nick, I'm forgetting Nick's last name, Nick came out and say that again.
Was it Nick Robertson?
No, it wasn't. But in any case, the fellow with Time Magazine, the Australian. And he came out and he said, no, in fact, the Iraqis did not lead that. They were very much at the back because I was embedded with them and I was right there. I saw the whole thing happen from the beginning to the end. And so they had him say that and then turn to Senator John Warner and said, what do you think? And he said, I'm not going to disagree, basically, with the reporter. And so here you have a Republican senator, you know, major in armed services and the whole thing, saying that he doesn't disagree with Time magazine when it asserts that George W. Bush lied to the American people and the world in his speech a couple of days ago. Is that going anywhere in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think if we couple it with the hearing that the Senate Armed Services is having today, I believe, even as we speak, about the planted stories in Iraqi newspapers planted by the U.S. military, because Senator Warner's concerned about that, and some of the things that he said on Meet the Press on Sunday, which seem to indicate really a strong degree of, I don't want to use the word dissatisfaction, but of concern with the direction the administration's going, I think he's starting to look to the Republicans as a less reliable supporter than they'd like.
John Warner. Yeah. Well, or it may be that we're having a few Republican senators who are starting to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe my loyalty to the United States is higher than my loyalty to the RNC.
I agree. I think that is how he's being viewed. And having seen him at the Senate Armed Services Committee and seen the kinds of questions that he's asked, I would say that, generally speaking, that is where his loyalty lies. He's quite tough on witnesses, particularly witnesses from the military and from the Pentagon, if he feels he's being fed a line.
Yeah, I'm very willing to believe that John Warner is a patriot, not a Republican stooge.
Yeah.
Tragically, there's a few Republican stooges in the Congress and in the Senate, but I'm not sure that John Warner is among them.
I'm shocked
you
say that.
Yeah, you're shocked. Absolutely shocked. Okay, yes. Gambling?
Yeah.
Okay, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks, Victoria, for your report today.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from you. Much appreciated. Oh, my goodness. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. Patty in Faircrest, Washington State on the line. Hey, or Patsy. Hey, Patsy.
Yeah, hi. Listen, I was going to call her in earlier, but that... the last question that the caller called in for Bernie, I don't know if you saw the New York Times today, but the campaign finance restriction in Connecticut, did you see that article?
Yeah.
It's about, it's including a ban on donations for lobbyists and state contractors, and it's the first.
Yes.
It's the beginning. And, you know, another thing I want to bring up is...
The question, Patsy, though, is will it survive any kind of constitutional challenge?
I know. It may not. But the thing is, it was important that it started.
Yeah, I agree.
And it was by a Republican governor.
Yep.
But, you know, it was really funny that John Edwards, when he was running before he went with Kerry, he was saying that we ought to get rid of the lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and all of a sudden, for some reason, he shut up on that subject.
You mean since the election is over or leading up to the election?
When he was running.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm willing to forgive these guys probably more than I should, because once they're in the middle of running for a race, it's very difficult to also be in the middle of trying to change the system, because you're in the machine, and if you're going to change the machine, you have to get through the race to be part of the machine to be able to change the machine. It's one of the things that just amazes me about Bernie Sanders, is that he will continue to say, as he has said on this program for 2 years now, he will continue to take strongly the positions that the machine needs to be changed, even as he's running for the United States Senate. Whereas a lot of folks, like you point out, John Edwards, although he was running for vice president, which is a whole different level of the game.
When he was running for president, he was saying he was going to get rid of the lobbyists.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when he got to be running for vice president, all of a sudden you never heard another word.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I suspect that had more to do with, you know, they just had to do what they had to do to get elected, but because I still hold John Edwards in fairly high esteem, but
I do too.
Yeah, you know, hopefully he's not another hypocrite. I think he's not. Patsy, thanks for the call.
Okay,
great to hear from you. I appreciate it. It's really remarkable what's going on out there. We have, you know, so many strange goings on, as they say, not the least of which. Yes. Not the least of which, our Berlusconi alert for the day. You'll recall Silvio Berlusconi, the small-time crook and businessman in Italy, who bought a radio station, and then he bought a television station, and then he bought another radio station. Then he bought a newspaper, and then he bought another radio station, and then he bought another television station, and then he bought another newspaper, and then he bought a couple magazines, and then he bought a radio network, and then he bought a television network, and then he bought another radio network, and then he bought the other TV network, and then he bought a whole bunch more newspapers, and now he owns about 90% of all the media in Italy, including all of the radio and television networks. And then he decided to run for office. And surprise, surprise, he won! Well, it's catching up with him. This from Milan, Italy, via Reuters. An Italian appeals court upheld a corruption conviction against a close ally of Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi today, confirming a 5-year prison term for Cesare Pravetti for bribing a Rome judge. Pravetti, who served as defense minister in Berlusconi's first government in 1994, has said, I'm not a crook. He's accused of paying $434,000 in bribes to Judge Renato Squillante in 1991 to win favorable rulings in unspecified cases that might be coming before him. Now, the judge, Squillante, is facing a 7-year jail term for the same deal. What are those rulings that he was bribing the judge for? Well, turns out Silvio Berlusconi was indicted in the same case. And he might have been convicted, except that the statute of limitations ran out. Friday's verdict represented a bitter blow for Pravetti and came just 6 months after he lost an appeal in a separate graft trial for which he was handed a 7-year prison sentence. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. Yes, it's all about Silvio. And I got to tell you, my friends, there's a lesson in this for us. I mean, this is what happens when they rise up and take over the media. Look out. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Well, not quite like Berlusconi, but, we would settle for clean electoral systems.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, there's a change taking place way on the mountains. Acid rain is falling on the leaves. And down in Brazil, the fires are burning still. How are we gonna breathe without them trees? So let's leave some blue up above us.
Yeah, it sounds like a plan.
Let's leave some green on the ground.
Yeah, another good plan.
It's only as tomorrow. Let's say some for tomorrow.
There you go. Welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program, the vast radical middle conspiracy, take no imitations. Vietnam War intelligence deliberately skewed. This is fascinating. This is in today's New York Times. The National Security Agency has released hundreds of pages of long secret documents. This is about the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Remember, 1964. Probably many of you are too young to remember, but nonetheless, back in 1964, there was a U.S. warship in the Gulf of Tonkin. This is a body of water off the coast of Vietnam, or a gulf, off, sort of like the Gulf of Mexico, a giant bay. It's the Gulf. What do you call it? Anyway, this warship, and we were told that it had been attacked by North Vietnamese ships. Actually, it was several of our destroyers that were attacked. One in particular that was badly injured on August 4th, 1964. And Lyndon Johnson put together, first of all, airstrikes on North Vietnam in retaliation, and then asked Congress to pass a broad resolution authorizing military action, which they did. And that was when we, in a serious way, entered the Vietnam War. Up until that time, we'd been in Vietnam since the 50s. Right, as advisors. When the French left Vietnam, The CIA had a few folks in Vietnam, you know, basically trying to keep track of what was going on with the Chinese communists and the whole thing. I mean, we were all hysterical and paranoid about communism. And Eisenhower and Nixon actually, Eisenhower, the last couple of years of his presidency, turned a lot of responsibility over to Nixon. Nixon was in charge of the Cuba thing. He was in charge of most of the communism stuff. Eisenhower had a heart attack, et cetera, et cetera. In any case, you know, Nixon had these guys in Vietnam, and then Kennedy continued it. And it picked up steam after Kennedy was assassinated. In fact, more or less a year afterwards, this is August 4th, 1964. And now we are finding, I mean, literally this week, we are finding, as a result of historian Robert Hanyok, who wrote an article in an internal publication, this inside the National Security Agency, it was classified top secret, despite the fact that it dealt with events in 1964. Notes Scott Shane in today's New York Times. He wrote this article that, from the New York Times. In his 2001 article, an elaborate piece of detective work, Mr. Hanyok wrote that 90% of the intercepts of North Vietnamese communications relevant to the supposed August 4th, 1964 attack were omitted from the major agency documents going to policymakers. These are the CIA and NSA documents going to members of Congress. The overwhelming body of reports, quoting from the report now, the overwhelming body of reports, if used, would have told the story that no attack had happened, he wrote. So a conscious effort ensued to demonstrate that an attack occurred. You get this? I mean, this is the same thing, by the way, that happened in 1897, I believe it was, with the USS Maine, which a U.S. ship that was off the coastal waters of the Philippines, and the boiler blew up, and President McKinley, with a little bit of help from his friends in the yellow journalism business, decided that the Spanish had attacked the Maine. Remember, the Maine was the battle cry of the Spanish-American War, and declared war on Spain and took the Philippines, and it basically took us 40 years to occupy and pacify the Philippines and turn them over to something that resembled self-government. And arguably, they never even got that. You'd say Ferdy Marcos was a U.S. toady right up until the end. And, in fact, I was there in the Philippines the week that Ferdy Marcos fell. In fact, not him, but all of his buddies fleeing the country got me bumped off planes 4 days in a row. I had a reservation on Philippine Airlines from Manila to Hawaii to try and get home, and I couldn't get an airplane. Every day I'd show up at the airport. I've got a reservation. I got a ticket. I'm sorry. All of them, you know, Marcos's friends, they get in front of you. So in any case, we did this in the late 19th century, the McKinley administration, the one that Karl Rove says he wants to model the Bush presidency after. It was Mark Hanna's idea. He was the Karl Rove, the Machiavelli to McKinley. And Karl Rove has said he wants to model himself after Mark Hanna. It was done by the McKinley administration in 1897. It was done, now we know for sure, by Lyndon Johnson, the Democrat, in 1964. 90% of the communications, all the information, this is the Vietnamese talking to themselves, intercepted communications within Vietnam, where they're saying, did you bomb that ship? No, I didn't. Did you? No, I didn't. Hey, maybe Ralph did. No, Ralph says he didn't. What about, you know, and like that, you know, the whole conversation going on. And all of these things were intercepted, 90% of those intercepts deliberately withheld from Congress so that Congress would authorize LBJ to have a war. Why? Because back in 1964, if you wanted to run for re-election, if you wanted to be president of the United States or continue to be, he inherited it from Jack Kennedy after his assassination. If you wanted to be president of the United States, you had to prove that you were tough on communism. And that's what Lyndon Johnson was trying to do in Vietnam. It was all about politics, just like, in my opinion, and it was just like it was all about politics, by the way, in 1897. It was all about getting McKinley a second term. And just like I believe that the war in Iraq was all about politics, it was all about getting the Republicans to take back the Senate, and it was all about getting Bush reelected. So, you know, mighty strange goings on. Now we learn that Congress was lied to in 1964. And we were not attacked. There was no Pearl Harbor. There was no Gulf of Tonkin. The Gulf of Tonkin was not a Pearl Harbor incident. Amazing. And it's only taken, what, 40 years? 41 years? It's tragic, actually. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. I'm Tom Hartman. It's 3 minutes before the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The Tom Hartman radio program exposing the con and conservative. Glad to have you with us. By the way, a caller called to correct me. The USS Maine was blown up in Havana Harbor, not the Philippines. And you're right. However, we used that as an excuse to take the Philippines. So pardon my confusion. Anyhow, welcome back to the program. Ted Glick is with us. He's the co-founder of the Climate Crisis Coalition of the USA Join the World campaign. ClimateCrisis.us is their website. Ted, you've got some big plans?
Yes, we do. Tomorrow is a big day for the Earth. For the very much threatened ecosystem of the Earth. It's an international day of action on the climate crisis, day of action to stop global warming. There are 30 countries around the world where actions are happening. There's a major demonstration in Montreal itself where this big climate UN climate conference is taking place. In the United States, there's at least 26, 27 or more states where their action is taking place. So it's a good day for the Earth. It's the beginnings, we think, of a grassroots movement on this issue, which is sorely needed because the putting of emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, into the atmosphere is actually accelerating. It's not getting better. The United States is a deserter when it comes to participation in this process. It has refused to sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. The role that it is playing up at the Montreal climate talks is essentially a role of obstruction, of trying to prevent forward movement on this critical issue on the part of the other nations of the world. But it's a good day because people will be acting for the Earth, acting for a future for our children and for all forms of life on this Earth, which are very threatened by what's going on.
This is pretty vital stuff, Ted Glick. I mean, Al Gore has made the point that global climate change is more of a threat to us than terrorism, than war. If so many actions are happening all over the world, as you just described, and I'm not at all doubting, I mean, the information is right here in front of me, why is the mainstream media in the United States virtually ignoring this story?
Well, I think it has something to do with the influence of the oil and the coal companies. The fact is that four of the top 10 Fortune 500 corporations in terms of wealth are energy companies. They have a tremendous amount of influence. I think that has impacts upon media that clearly is concerned about their corporate connections and corporate sponsorships and the impact and the power of some of those institutions. I think that's part of it. Beyond that, I think that our media on this issue, as on many other issues, is just not being, they're not engaging in the journalism that they should be engaging in if they truly were about the issues that are of most concern to the people of the United States. This is not an issue where the people of this country don't get it. There was a Fox News poll, of all things, a few weeks ago that said that something like 77% of the American people believe that global warming is real, that it's happening, and 60% believe it's a major issue that action needs to be taken on.
Well, it's a little hard to ignore all those hurricanes.
I'm sorry? Oh, yes, with Katrina, absolutely.
Yeah, and not just Katrina. I mean, we're up to now Gamma or something like that.
That's right.
It's pretty hard to ignore that. And there are people saying, well, these are just normal cycles. But we've never run out of names before. And so what can people do if they want to participate in this, or if they want to speak out, they want to make their voice heard, they want to say, yes, something needs to be done. The United States, at the very least, first of all, is it too late for us to participate in the Kyoto agreements? Do we need to go to a next step?
No, it's not too late. The U.S. at any point could sign on. The Kyoto Protocol went into effect in February of this year, and it continues for 7 years. It's up until 2012 that the countries that have signed on to it have to meet their targets, to meet the various targets that have been set. There are 38 industrialized countries that cumulatively need to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by 5.2% by 2012, which is just the beginning. It's really just the beginning. So much more is needed. The U.S. could sign on to that. But in terms of what people can do, first of all, people can check out our website, climatecrisis.us, www.climatecrisis.us, and find out where actions are happening tomorrow. There are a bunch of them all around the country. People could take action themselves either tomorrow or sometime next week. This climate conference in Montreal goes on until next Friday. In fact, next week will be the critical week in terms of the decision-making process, so that it's important that we keep up the pressure, that people call the White House, call Congress people.
Telephone number, by the way, for that is 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121.
You know, let's call for our representatives to speak out on this issue now. Let's hear them say, yes, let's join Kyoto. Yes, let's join the world. Yes, let's get serious on this critical global warming crisis that the U.S. has so much to do with. We have 5% of the world's population. We emit 25% of the greenhouse gases. So we need to get with the world. People also in their individual lives, it's important that we take this issue seriously in terms of energy use. We need to watch how often keeping our lights on. I mean, these things are small things, but they cumulatively have an effect. People should look into putting solar panels on their roof, support projects to develop wind power. There's various other forms of renewable energy that need to come onto the market and that need to become much more extensive so that we can make this shift as quickly as possible.
Ted Glick, the British press is running stories, ran a few stories yesterday based on some recent studies showing that the Great Conveyor Belt, the flow of warm water from the Pacific around the tip of Africa up, across through the Gulf of Mexico into off to the coast of Europe, which carries an enormous amount of heat to Europe and basically keeps Europe temperate, is stuttering, maybe dropping as much as 20% over the last few years.
Yeah.
And if this happens, Europe could be plunged back into an ice age, or at least into something close to it, into a permafrost age, thus rendered incapable of producing food. And you got 800 million people living there.
Right.
At what point do we stop saying, it's time for us to go out and march in the streets. Oh, it's time for us to put a solar collector on the roof of the house and start saying, we're looking at a crisis of biblical proportions here. Here are the more radical emergency steps to be taken. At what point do we start talking about moving away from the seacoasts because the oceans are going to rise? At what point do we start talking about how are we going to be able to feed this country if we have, major massive desertification in the United States?
Well, these are the issues that we do need to be talking about. These are the things that we need to be making connections between the lifestyles that some people are living in this country, and the need for change in those lifestyles. And then particularly government policies. I mean, government has a great deal to do, of course, with what happens here. We subsidize, our government subsidizes, according to Ross Gelbspan, the author, major energy corporations, oil and coal corporations, to the tune of $25 billion a year. We should cut those subsidies completely and put that money into the development of clean, renewable energy sources. That's a very concrete step that could be taken. Another proposal that we support is, and this is supported by the European Union's Environmental Commissioner, I forget her name right now, is to establish a fund, a $300 billion a year fund that could be financed in different ways. One way is for a one-quarter of a penny tax on the dollar of international currency transactions. That would generate $300 billion to go into the development
of clean energy, of solar, of wind, of other renewable energy sources in developing countries, in the countries of the global south. That's one of the issues that Bush talks about, Bush and the people around him, that because China and India are not taking action the way that they would like them to take action and are not part of Kyoto.
Well, China is moving very aggressively towards solar power.
There are any number of things that can be done. That the key question that those of us who understand this issue have to really continue to grapple with is how can we be about work on this issue on a consistent basis, working collaboratively with a range of groups so that we make this an issue that every person running for office next year in 2006 has to address, and if they don't, they're going to be hurt at the ballot box.
Yeah, well said. Ted Glick with climatecrisis.us. We'll have to leave it there. But I appreciate your being with us. Thank you very much for coming on, Ted.
Thank you.
Good luck. Climatecrisis.us, the website. And one of many, I might add. There's Ross Gelbspan's work, theheatisonline.com, I believe is his website. Ross Gelbspan's work, his book, The Heat Is On, is out in new edition. And there's just some amazing information out there that we all need to be paying attention to. It's 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
There's the dark and the troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side, too.
Welcome back, my friends. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. You're in the real free speech zone, the Tom Hartman radio program. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM. Just a second, we'll be coming to your phone calls. First, Andy Borowitz weighing in on George W. Bush from BorowitzReport.com. President George W. Bush has been talking tough on the subject of illegal immigration in recent days, although he appeared to reverse course today, announcing a guest worker program that allows illegal immigrants to work inside the White House itself. Recognizing that his new plan was likely to draw the ire of conservatives and other foes of illegal immigration, Mr. Bush said that the guest workers' duties in the White House would be limited. Said Bush, quote, "They will mainly be responsible for leaking classified information to the press," end quote. According to White House insiders, using illegal immigrants to perform leaking functions that were formerly the responsibility of White House aides has several advantages. Principally, after leaking the information to reporters, the guest workers can sneak over the border back to their country of origin before being subpoenaed, indicted, or summoned to testify before Congress. But several White House aides were angered by the president's guest worker program, arguing that leaking was an American job that should be performed only by Americans. Several prominent leakers within the White House inner circle were considering strategies to combat the guest worker program, including organizing a leakers union in the White House that would be impossible for the illegal immigrants to join. But despite the complaints, one aide said that the president was unlikely to terminate his guest worker program anytime soon. He seems to like having other people around the White House, they said, who don't speak English as their first language. Yes, that from Andy Borowitz. Now, on a more serious note, General Pace, standing beside Don Rumsfeld. And Pace says, if our troops witness cruel and inhuman actions, the abuse of Iraqi citizens or detainees, they must stop it. They must prevent it. They must intervene. Rumsfeld says, no, they shouldn't intervene. They should simply report it. And then Pace says, no, they should intervene. But he does so. You can tell he is saying, he is pausing. He's standing next to his boss. And he's contradicting him. I mean, well, here, I'll just, let you hear it yourself.
It is absolutely the responsibility of every U.S. service member, if they see inhumane treatment being conducted, to intervene to stop it.
I don't think you mean they have an obligation to physically stop it. It's to report it.
If they are physically present when inhumane treatment is taking place, or they have an obligation to try to stop it.
Yeah, I know it's a lousy audio there, but hopefully you caught it. You got what they said. This is just amazing. It's absolutely amazing. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Brian in Eureka, California, welcome to the program. You're live and on the air. What's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, Brian.
A couple things just before I get to a question and a comment for you. A little historical tidbit. I spent some time soon after high school as a tour guide at Hearst Castle. And the William Randolph Hearst estate, in one of the little snippets that we like to go through on our tours and things like that.
Let me guess. Hearst brought us the Spanish-American War.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
And he had sent Remington down there to do sketches, and Remington cables back, there's nothing going on down here. And Hearst cables back and says, just wait.
That's right.
There will be.
Yeah, and another famous Hearst quote to that effect is something to the effect of, you know, we're going to have a war whether the people want it or not. You know, it sells newspapers.
Exactly. My comment and question is, the comment is, I really wonder what world George Bush lives in when he can talk about, you know, a great economy and things like that. And just yesterday and the day before, GM announces 30,000 layoffs, Ford announcing layoffs, Merck announcing layoffs. I mean, I just really wonder, you know, where he's at, if he's the boy in the bubble or he really believes what he's saying.
Or both.
Or both. And my question for you is, I was listening earlier when Bernie was talking, and I'm not a youngster, I'm almost 48 years old, so I don't really have rose-colored glasses on, but I really have to ask you a question. Do you think anything will really change when it comes to campaign finance reform and such, until such time as the corporations and things are really, I mean, outlawed from, you know, buying off our politicians that they
well, that's, there? You know, that's what it's going to take. I mean, clearly that's what it's going to take, Brian. But here's that's the bad news. Here's the good news. The good news is that I've never talked to a politician who likes the fact that they have to suck up to corporations for money in order to get reelected.
Right.
Never. I mean, even the corrupt ones, even the ones, I mean, there's a couple of politicians here in Oregon that I know are in the, you know, they're in the pockets of these guys. They're voting for CAFTA. They're voting for the Bankruptcy Act, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
You ask them in confidence, sometimes even on the air, what should we do? And they say, you know, one of the biggest problems is we need campaign finance reform. The problem is the Supreme Court has made it very difficult.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court, with a series of decisions, Boston versus Bilotti, and there's another one. There's a whole series of them in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that basically said corporations are persons, and they therefore have the right to speak. And because they don't have a mouth, they have to use money for their speech. And you know, until these decisions are overturned or rolled back, we're going to have a really hard time. This is why McCain-Feingold, it didn't regulate corporations because they're persons. It regulated politicians, and you know, it's a problem. Dan, by the way, says. Alex's Citizen Kane was based on that story we were talking about. We'll be right back. 27 minutes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And the lonely voice of you cries, what is truth? A little boy of three, sitting on the floor, looks up and says, Daddy, what is war? Son, that's when people fight and die. A little boy of three says, Daddy, why? Young man of 17 in Sunday school, being taught the golden rule. And by the time another year's gone around, it may be his turn to lay his life down. Can you blame the voice of you for asking, what is true?
The eternal question. 25 minutes before the hour. In fact, it was, wasn't that Pilot's question, Britt Mensel? Minchel? Britt,
Johnny Cash, I forget.
Yeah, I thought that, I'm trying to remember whether it was, whether what is truth was out of Plato or whether that was what Pilot said when Jesus was brought before him.
Well, I think that it was out of Plato, but I think Pilot said something like, you know, this man is truthful or something, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Anyhow, Britt Minchell is with us. He's a theologian and a minister of the United Church of Christ. And there's this whole wacky conspiracy theory that that Fox News, particularly Bill O'Reilly, are out there flogging. Although I got to say, here in Portland, Oregon, we've got a local conservative talk show host. He's doing the same thing. I mean, it's kind of a national trend among right-wing talk show hosts to say that there's a war on Christmas.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I wanted to ask you about that and also talk with you about Christmas trees. But another note here first that I thought was interesting was a Catholic school in New York has fired an unwed teacher for becoming pregnant. And I'm curious your take on that.
Well, yeah, I was asked about that last night on a couple of shows, too. The situation there, of course, number one, I told the newscasters that obviously the school has the right, the legal right to fire the teacher. Now you go on back from there. If it's supposed to be a Christian organization, now we need to look at the situation. You've got a situation where she is a Roman Catholic. She has to obey the rules of the Catholic Church in order to keep that teaching job, which means that she can't use birth control and she can't get an abortion. She could have done either one and this situation wouldn't be happening. So she's trying to obey the rules of her church.
Well, there was a third rule that says you can't have sex before you're married.
Well, that's
she kind of blew that one.
Well, the whole world's blown
that
one.
No pun intended.
The Catholic priests have managed to do that one pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing. What I think it all boils down to the fact, Tom, which so many churches do, not just Catholics, but so many churches have the tendency to forget what Jesus said when he said, "Woe to the scribes and Pharisees," that's the church of his day, "you bind people with heavy burdens that they cannot keep, and then they cannot come through the door to the kingdom of heaven."
Mm.
So what churches tend to do is they make these rules, all of which tend to focus on people's lapses, okay, not on things like justice in the world or fighting against war or ending poverty, but just on who's doing what to who.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, you know, the snappy comeback here is that Mary was an unwed mother.
Indeed, she was the
mother of Jesus.
That makes some people real angry, but it was true.
Yeah, she was pregnant. She wasn't married, and another woman in a similar situation, although presumably not asserting a virgin birth, but her conception is being kicked out. But I think that you just Britt Minshall just put your finger on, or touched, or spoke to the real issue here, and that is that there are really two kinds of morality floating around in the United States. Conservative morality tends to be, in my observation, and tell me if I'm off on this, tends to be about what people are doing in private. Conservatives seem to want to know who's sleeping with whom, in what position, of what gender, and whether or not it's legally, this, that, and the other thing. Are they praying to the right gods? Are they taking the right or the wrong drugs? All these kinds of things. Whereas liberal morality, And I use the word liberal cautiously because, frankly, I think this is traditional, not just Christian, but, you know, right, Christian, Jewish, I mean, pick your religion, traditional American morality, let's say, is really concerned with what we're doing in public. It's the Matthew 25 argument that, you know, are there hungry among us? Then we're sinners. Are there people among us who are naked, who don't have clothing? Are there people among us who are in prison and not being visited? Are there people among us who are thirsty? Are there people among us who are sick and not being attended to? If so, then we are all experiencing a moral failing. And conservatives really don't think of that as a moral failing. And I think liberals, in quotes, don't so much think about, what people do in private as a moral failing that all of society should be worried about.
That's actually right. And I believe that's what Marx talked about, although I'm not a Marxist at all.
Well, this is what Jesus talked about.
Religion is the opiate of society. In other words, what the people in power like to do is get us all fussing and looking at our own private lives and just really marching in line, while they at the same time plunder not only us, but half the rest of the world. And as long as we're not looking at what they're doing in Haiti or what they're doing in Afghanistan or wherever, then they can plunder everybody everywhere, and we're running around concerned with, as you say, who's sleeping with who.
Yeah. Yeah, now,
yeah, you're right, 100%.
Here's another thing. I find this fascinating. The assault on Christmas thing, meme that O'Reilly and the other cons are out there flogging. And by the way, the president's Christmas card just came out, and it doesn't have the word Christ or Christmas anywhere in it. It's a Happy Holidays card, which
is
going to have to get poor old Bill O'Reilly just hysterical. Although O'Reilly, up until yesterday, was selling holiday ornaments on his website. He changed it to Christmas ornaments. But they're all about this Christmas tree thing. I lived in Germany for a couple of years, and I remember the winter of 1986. We went out in the forest. There was a bunch of us who in the place where I lived. We went out in the forest on the night of December 24th, and somebody had gone out ahead of us. One of the group had gone out ahead of us, and they had put all these candles, I mean live candles, in this giant fir tree, and we gathered around it, and there were horses and goats and sheep and kids and the adults and probably 100 people around this tree, and we sang carols and one of the elder guy in his 70s read from the Bible and it was a really sweet time. And I asked later, you know, how did this Christmas tree thing come about? And they said, well, you know, Martin Luther really kind of started the thing about Christmas trees in your homes, but really it goes back to, you know, 3,000-4,000 years ago in the northern European countries. The sun would get so low in the sky, it's winter solstice, you know, December 22nd, 21st, 22nd, 23rd, depends on the year, that people thought it was going to go out. And the priest, you know, the priest would come up and he'd say, and of course he had calendar stones, you know, he knew when the solstice was, and he'd say, oh, the sun's going to go out. We've got to reignite it. And they'd go up in the highest mountain and they'd find the biggest tree and they'd set that sucker on fire, and the priest would stand up there and go, sun, I order you to be reignited. And the next day, the sun would be out there a little bit longer, and the next day a little bit longer, and a week later a lot longer, and the people would all go, he did it again.
He did it again, right. Wow, what power these priests have, right?
Right, exactly. And they did for thousands of years. And they had, and then, you know, by maybe two millennia ago, about 2,000 years ago, people had figured out that this was a natural cycle. So then it became, under the Romans, it became lighting the tree, became the celebration that the sun was coming back rather than pleading with the sun to come back. But it's basically the same thing. And this all preceded Jesus. In fact, Jesus had, to the best of my knowledge, never said anything about Christmas trees, did he?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, the funny thing about this whole thing, I've just become aware of this discussion the last couple of days, is for years the church, especially the conservative church, when you get their sermon materials, which I use their sermon materials all the time, for 4 weeks before Christmas, it's been a decrying of Christmas trees and gifts and spending money. It's been, you know,
pagan rituals
back into Christmas.
Right, yeah.
And so they wanted to get rid of all this department store stuff.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, number one, the 25th of December is not Christ's birthday. It was Marcion's birthday. He was the patron god of the Roman legion.
Right.
And in the 3rd century, when Caesar, not Caesar, but
Augustus.
Constantine.
Or Constantine, yeah.
Right, ruled that all the legion would become Christian. Well, they had to do something with the 25th of December, so they started celebrating Christ's birthday on that date.
Yeah, in fact, isn't there evidence that the date that the taxing of all the people in Israel was done was in the spring, when you could actually travel, which would have been March or
that's
April.
That's right. Jesus probably could not have been born before the 20th of January. Some people say right in the neighborhood of February the 6th would be good.
Yeah.
But it was not the 25th. Then, as you say, as the Christianity moved up through the centuries into Germany, they already found these people doing this thing, the god Belphorus. Went before Jesus in that area, and he was a god who lived in the forest. And so they often would cut down a tree and bring the Belphorus into the house to keep them safe over the winter.
Right, or when they build a new house. In fact, we built a new house in Russia just a couple of years ago, and I was there when they christened the house, and they took a green twig and nailed it over at the very tip-top of the crest of the roof.
That's right, exactly. And so all of these things are fine. By the way, in my church, I have to let you know, we've got a huge cathedral church. And there are two great big 20-foot Christmas trees up in front of it with lights and everything else. So I don't think it's, you know, bad. It's not a Christian apostasy or anything. But to fight over it is kind of ludicrous because it isn't Christian at all.
Right. If we really want to be promoting religion at this time of year, whether it's Christianity or whether it's, you know, the idea of tikkun in Judaism or whatever it may be, we should be serving the poor.
That's right.
That's the bottom line.
And loving each other. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the bottom line of all the world's great religions, and it's just so bizarre to hear these conservatives say that progressives are trying to mount an attack on Christmas by simply pointing some of these things out. Mind-boggling.
No, just a culture fighting, that's all.
There you go. Dr. Brent Minshall, is there a website you'd like to direct people to?
Ringofangels.com. My book is Ring of Angels. It's about Haiti, and it's about the dirty tricks that the American government has done to the people of Haiti over the last 10 years.
Ah, we talked about this about 6 months ago, didn't
we? Yes, we sure did.
Indeed, I remember. Thank you very much. Ringofangels.com. Britt Minshall, theologian and United Church of Christ minister. Thanks so much for being with us here today.
Okay, Tom, you take care.
You too, and Merry Christmas. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where reason and passion go together like Republican presidents and gay hookers. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, Barry, what's the mercy? And always take me there, the place I love.
And welcome back, my friends.
People around every corner.
Special thanks this week. Dan Jacobs and Alexander Goldmark at Air America Radio New York, David Poole here in Portland, and Louise helping produce the program, getting it out there. Sue Nethercott in our chat room from London, no less, helping run the chat room. To Shelby and Ben, who are streaming the program on RadioPower.org and WhiteRoseSociety.org, the folks at CRN Digital beaming us into television. Literally, cable TV systems in 29 states. Those high channels where you hear music, you can hear this program in lots of places. To all of our affiliates, radio stations all across the United States, the folks at Sirius Satellite Radio, our sponsors, and to you. Thank you very much for being with us on this entire week. Welcome back. Our telephone number, 866-44, almost gave you my home phone number. 866-44, you can tell us the end of the week. 440-8466, 440-THOM, our telephone number. Val in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Val, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I have a question. It might be a little off the wall, but what puzzles me most is this Christian coalition is keeping him afloat and keeping his popularity. But
him being Bush, you mean?
Yeah, so Bush, yeah. And he's clearly not a Christian, and clearly. And I don't understand why our great Billy Graham, who is one of the most respected men in the globe, him and his family, hold him up so high and in such high esteem, because how can he not see what this man is doing to the economy alone? And the Bible says you cannot be a servant of a master of money and the Lord Jesus Christ.
Right.
He clearly serves money. I don't understand Billy Graham, because I think if he would get up and he would expose this man, Christians would have to start listening, because they are keeping him afloat with popularity.
Yeah, I don't agree with you, Val. I don't disagree with you, Val. I think that we have a Pharisee problem here. And
we
that
do.
Is,
we do.
That, you know, that is a major Pharisee problem here. And that is, you know, the corruption of even the word Christian, much less the churches and themselves. I mean, you've got Pat Robertson out there who has a net worth of over $1 billion. You got Jerry Falwell taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from Reverend Moon. You got Reverend Moon declaring that Jesus failed and he's here to finish the work, publishing the Washington Times, the only newspaper that George W. Bush will read. And I mean, it's like an unholy alliance of weird guys.
It's weird, but I mean, Billy Graham should know of all people, I would think.
Well, I suspect that Billy Graham's not entirely all there these days, and I have some doubts about his son, frankly. But I don't know, and it's certainly not my place to judge any of them.
No, I'm not judging the man. I'm just saying the Christian coalition's keeping him popular, and it's a shame, because he don't need their money, but the popularity is helping him.
Well, this is, like I said, that's the Pharisee problem. I mean, what you've got here is people who are trying to get power, and they're using religion for power. Val, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Thanks for pointing it out. I mean, these are important things to say out loud. Jennifer in Arcata, California. Hey, Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
I'm calling in relation to the Ted Glick interview you just did.
Yeah, on about the climate.
Yeah, we're having here in Arcata an event to mark the International Day of Action to Stop Global Warming.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
so everybody listening to, it's KGOE there in Arcata, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I wanted to call and give our event a plug, if that's okay.
Go for it.
It's at the Redwood Alliance office in Arcata from 2 to 5 tomorrow, and they can check out redwoodalliance.org.
Okay.
But also, I wanted to say that I started this climate protection project here, the Redwood Alliance Climate Protection Project, and for a large part because of what you've been talking about over the last year about getting active and all the work that you have done on global warming and climate change.
Well, bless you, Jennifer. That's great. I'm so glad to hear you're doing that.
Yeah.
That's what it takes. I mean, that is what it's going to take on every single level, on every single issue, is for those of us who care about things to, you know, grab onto something that really energizes you and just go with it, make it happen.
And it really doesn't matter what it is, because it's all about more fundamental issues anyway. And
that's right.
Just what might grab people.
Yep. It all becomes part of the larger picture. Jennifer, thanks so much for the call. I gotta move along. I appreciate great hearing from you. Don in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Hey, Don, we got about 2 minutes. What's up?
Oh, hey. Well, I was calling about Iraq, but just real quickly on the whole environmental thing. I'm converting a diesel powered car to vegetable oil, and I've replaced all my light bulbs to the energy saver bulbs. It's just a small thing that people can do.
Yeah, we can all take steps. We all need to begin. You begin where you can begin.
Well, what I'm calling about today is I'm in the Army, and I remember back in 2002. They were saying, my buddies were saying, it looks like we're going to war with Iraq. And I'm like, what? Iraq?
Yep.
That can't be. And sure enough, you know, they knew what they were talking about. And then here it is. We have all these foreign countries that are going to pull out. And the way I look at it is nothing happens without a plan first. And I think the Republicans and Congress, they're planning on pulling out, so they're going ahead and letting all the foreign countries sit. They're saying, hey, go ahead and pull your troops out. We'll be following you shortly.
Oh, absolutely. This is I've been saying this on this program, Don, for some time, that what the Republicans are so upset about with Jack Murtha is that a Democrat had the temerity to say out loud about a month before the Republicans actually did what the Republicans were going to do. And that is that they're going to get the troops out of there in time for the elections in 2006, because if they don't, they're not going to hold the House or the Senate. And, you know, they're just going to go ahead and do it. I mean, there's just no way around it. Don, thanks for the call. Gary in Pittsburgh with just a few seconds left. Quick comment.
Thank you, Tom. And thank you for your statesmanship-like quality, you and Bernie Sanders. The big difference between the politician and the statesman. The politician thinks for the next election. People as yourselves and the great Bernie Sanders think of the next generation.
Well said. Not that I'd put myself in that category necessarily.
Well, I just did.
Okay, well, thank you, Gary. And Bernie is certainly a statesman, and we're always honored to have him on here. And Gary, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to the program. Well, have a great weekend, my friends. Shabbat Shalom, TGIF, whatever it is, whatever is appropriate. Hope you enjoy yourself, take good care of yourself, be good to your friends. Spread the holiday cheer and the holiday season around to the extent you can. We'll see you next week. Same time, next place. Same time, same place. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.